Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 110, you're listening to The Morning After. I'm your co-host, Sari Kamen. My other co-host, Jesse Kiefer, is unfortunately not with us today. Sadly, she lost her grandfather today, so we are thinking about her and wishing her well, and looking forward to her being back next week. Luckily, I do have a good friend and a lovely fellow joiner. I have Diana Kwan in studio with me today. Hello, Diana.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm not sure how well I can hear right now. Let's check. Maybe can get some volumes turned up, possibly. Okay. Well, we're in the studio on Sunday, per usual. It's sunny out. Roberta is watching all these wonderful people eating pizza. I have to ask, where would you be eating brunch right now if you weren't right here?
If I weren't? Well, I just had lunch, but if I weren't having...
Did you eat lunch at home or did you
go out? Yeah, I ate lunch at home.
Did you make something amazing?
I don't know if it's amazing. It's something quick and hearty. It's just an omelet with kale and sriracha.
Well, that sounds pretty good. So you are like a renaissance woman of the ages. So first of all, you have a blog.
Yeah.
And your blog is?
Appetite for China.
Appetite for China, because you are Chinese. And you grew up eating regional Chinese food.
Yeah.
You have a cookbook. It's called The Chinese Takeout Cookbook.
Right.
And you do pop-up dinners.
Yes. I do seasonal pop-up dinners with my friend Chitra Agarwal, and it's a Chinese-Indian fusion pop-up.
And you do cooking classes.
Yes.
And you started your own design brand, which is based, it's a food-inspired design brand.
Yes, exactly. It's called Plate and Pencil.
Okay, so that's a lot. Before we like get too deep into any of these in particular, how does anybody manage that many different things? How do you find the time? And what would you say is like your biggest focus right at this moment?
Well, how do I find the time? I don't sleep as much as I would like to.
Oh.
Well, my biggest focus right now is Plate and Pencil. It launched in December of last year. I'm just spending a lot of time getting it going. And then to a little bit lesser extent, teaching cooking classes and the pop-up dinner and a little bit of residual promotion for my cookbook.
Okay, so let's start with the brand, because there's so many different things that are going on. And you have functional things, like you have totes for wine, I've seen. Yep. And they all have like these really cute and funny slogans.
Oh, yeah. I have a Dumplings Around the World tote bag. It kind of it was inspired by all these dumpling classes that I was teaching. So I wanted to just like put all these like different dumplings that I was making and that people were asking about just all in a tote bag. Like,
now, is the tote bag specifically for carrying dumplings?
No, but it can be used for carrying dumplings.
Are you supposed to like gather dumplings from around the world and then carry it around in the tote bag?
People actually have carried various kinds of like frozen dumplings, fresh dumplings in the tote bags.
Oh, have they sent you pictures or how did
no,
you find out?
I found out because one of them actually came to one of my cooking classes later on, because the bag and the cooking class was a gift from his girlfriend, and he just was like, oh, I ended up using your tote bag to carry frozen dumplings, like 20 pounds of frozen dumplings from Chinatown. I was
oh,
like, wonderful.
Like, that's a perfect use of my tote bag.
Yeah.
And now you have like a line for babies now.
Oh,
well.
Yeah.
You have your hands on everything.
Yeah, it's fun. I have like these little dumpling onesies and
oh, I get it.
They're
like, there's those dumplings and those dumplings. So how did you come up with the idea to create your own brand? I mean, in addition to everything else, you're actually the designer.
Yes, I am. So my background before I went to culinary school, I studied art in college. And after I graduated from school, I wanted to get a design-related job, but there was really nothing available around that time. So I ended up working at a bookstore for a year and just deciding to go to culinary school. And just I was like, oh, maybe I'll just channel my creativity in a different way, and end up going to culinary school. Kind of dropped doing any sort of design and art for a while, and just focused on cooking. And that was like 9-10 years ago. And then now I feel like it's come around full circle.
That's so interesting. So design actually came first for mm-hmm. you.
Yep.
Which is funny, because now your designs are food inspired. Yes. So it's almost like you had to have this whole food, you know, experience yeah. and part of your life to be able to get back to what kind of designs you even wanted to be making.
Back then?
Or no, like now. You know,
oh, now?
Think, yeah. What kind of design? What kind of art did you want to do back then?
I wanted to do graphic design.
Okay, so you're kind of doing that.
Yeah.
And then who's actually making? Like, who makes the tote bag?
I source everything from a company in New Hampshire that does like American made products. Oh. And then I print the tote bags myself, and with a vast majority of everything myself. And there are some like large orders that I use a Brooklyn based screen printing shop for.
Wow. So do you find that there's like you're kind of torn in two different directions between your food life and the stuff you're doing and then the design stuff?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is just finding time to fit everything
yeah.
in, because sometimes I feel like I'm just working from morning until very, very late at night, and like for, you know, weeks straight. So
yeah. And you really work for yourself.
Yes, definitely.
You're like, I have no time to work for anybody no. else. Well, you're such an inspirational person to have on this show. I mean, actually, so full disclosure, listeners, Diana and I met at Eat Retreat 2013, mm-hmm. Which was this past October in the Finger Lakes region. And I believe that the Eat Retreat 2014 is happening right now.
Yeah, I think so in California.
Yeah, so shout out to Eat Retreat 2014 in California. I've seen a couple pictures. Have you?
I don't think I've seen pictures pop up on Facebook yet.
I've seen a few pictures pop up on Facebook, and it looks like you guys are having an amazing time. I think we have some friends from last
year
who are there.
Yeah, I think so. A handful of people.
Yeah, I think James Collier is there mm-hmm. doing photography, I'm guessing.
Again.
I've been seeing a lot of taco pictures coming from
him.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Like on his journey to California.
Oh, on his journey, like on route
yes,
to Eat Retreat, all
yes,
the tacos.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, he like had to have a serious taco mission on his way to
I'm
Anderson
jealous.
Valley. Yeah, and I've been seeing some like beautiful seafood pictures come out of
oh,
there.
Nice.
I know. I'm kind of
where
jealous.
Where exactly are they?
They're in Anderson Valley, which I don't know exactly where that is, but
either.
It's somewhere I think near San Francisco, but a little bit more remote.
Yeah.
So this is awesome. I mean, this is a perfect example of why Eat Retreat is such a great thing, and like the way people meet each other and how they keep in contact and can come on each other's radio shows.
Too bad I don't have a radio show for you to come on.
No, that you have dumplings. That'll work. That's perfectly suffice. We're going to take a quick break and we'll hear more from Diana Kwan.
It's your meat shop. Located in the historic Essex Street Market in New York City. For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're back listening to The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org here in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn on this lovely summer day. I'm here with, oh gosh, cookbook author, dumpling goddess, designer, educator, extraordinaire, Diana Kwan, the one and only one woman enterprise of dumplings and dumplings. Diana, you have a cookbook mm-hmm. that came out 2012?
Yeah, December 2012.
December 2012. It's called The Chinese Takeout Cookbook. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, it's kind of, on one level, it's kind of self-explanatory, but on another level, it's basically...
Let's talk about the other level.
It's like 85 of my favorite restaurant recipes just done better at home, with like no MSG, no food coloring, a lot less oil, a lot less starch. And how the idea basically came about was, I was living in China, gosh, how long ago was this? 2007, 2009.
Was this your upbringing or you just went back there?
No, this was, I was just living there, like learning Mandarin and teaching, I decided to just move there for a couple of years to Beijing and Shanghai, because I was working in a nonprofit job here that I didn't really like that much. So I decided to just go and live there for a while. And when I was there, I started my blog, Appetite for China, and I was traveling around the country, experiencing all these like different regional foods for the first time. And I found myself kind of ironically missing and craving some of the Chinese American foods that I grew up eating here in the U.S., like General Tso's chicken and fried wontons. And I also ended up getting all these emails from readers back in the U.S. asking how to make those dishes, even though I had all these, like, quote-unquote, more authentic and traditional
dishes.
So,
just to be clear, those dishes you did not find in China, correct?
No, definitely not.
There's no General Tso chicken
in
China?
No, no.
Oh, I love that.
You don't really have, like, breaded fried.
And I love that you craved that when you were there. That's so funny.
Yeah, I think it was just, like, what I was missing and not...
Yeah, like your comfort.
Yeah. I started putting recipes for those recipes up on my site, and for some reason the General Tso's chicken recipe became like exploded in popularity. So I was like, maybe I should do more of these recipes, like orange chicken or sesame chicken.
It seems like they would be hard to make.
Yeah, they're a little bit more involved than stir frying because you need to deep fry or shallow fry. But I ended up doing more of those recipes, and then when I came back to the U.S. I read this book called The Fortune Cookie Chronicles by Jennifer Ately, who was a reporter at the Times. And it was basically a nonfiction narrative of Chinese food, the history of Chinese food and Chinese food culture in the U.S. And I was reading the book and thinking, wow, I am getting so hungry, and I wish there were recipes for some of this stuff, and there weren't. So I was like, maybe I can write a cookbook that is like that, because there wasn't really anything on the market that just celebrated Chinese food in the U.S., so I decided to do that.
It's a really good idea.
Thank you.
But, so tell us, you know, to those of us who are really curious and want to go get this book, you know, why would we get the book and make the recipes instead of just ordering takeout, if you call it takeout anyway?
Because a lot of times when you go out to Chinese restaurants or get takeout food, you don't really know what the ingredients that they're putting in it are.
You definitely don't know.
Sometimes you're like, wow, this tastes good for like the first few bites, but then I'm just like hit with this like MSG bomb.
Yeah, and, or you kind of just feel sick afterwards.
Yeah, you kind of feel sick afterwards because there's so much grease, and you want the flavors, but you want it to like end up, you want to finish the meal not feeling like super sick. Like you just
want to not
like,
hate yourself
for the next like few days.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
So how do you do it? How did you figure out how to go about making the same dishes? But how did you even like figure out what the ingredients were? If it's kind of like a mystery when you eat it.
My parents taught me some like Cantonese dishes that were more traditional, and then kind of just using the same principles behind making, there are like general principles behind just making Chinese food, and just using the ideas behind that, I kind of just went out to eat and a lot, and then afterwards reverse engineered all these different dishes in my kitchen.
So what's in General Tso's chicken? I have no idea besides chicken.
Yeah, it's either chicken breast or mostly many restaurants. It's dark meat, so it's boneless, skinless chicken thighs, and then you coat it with a mix of sometimes it's like cornstarch, sometimes it's potato starch, and then you fry it until it's very crispy, and then you make it with a sauce that involves tomato paste, soy sauce, sesame oil, a little bit of chili sauce for spiciness. So it's just a good all-around, you know, good comfort food slash hangover food.
Yeah. And I bet you could use that same recipe and apply it to different proteins.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm thinking tofu because I'm not a chicken eater myself, or I don't know, seitan or
I've definitely done it with tofu, and it's still very, very good.
It still really works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you call the food in general in your book, would you call it healthy food?
I think, except for the fried recipes, they do tend to veer healthy.
And it's definitely healthier.
Yeah, it's definitely healthier. Yeah. It's not like salads all the time, but...
Right.
But you definitely have a good amount of vegetables. If it's meat, it's not big chunks of meat, but rather like small amounts just cut up.
Which is the traditional way to actually... Yeah,
exactly.
Eat food.
A lot of soups, vegetables, I don't use like processed ingredients.
What are some other recipes that you found have had a really good response?
From the book?
Yeah.
Cold sesame noodles. That's probably one of the recipes that people just beeline for because it's just so easy.
Exactly. That's so good when it's hot out.
Yeah, definitely.
I always crave that a lot.
And good for vegetarians too. Scallion pancakes. They're a lot easier than most people think to make.
I wouldn't think they're easy.
They're pretty easy once you get the hang of it.
Yeah.
Kung Pao chicken, General Tso's chicken.
What kind of soups do you have?
For soups, I have a egg drop soup, and that's really popular and easy to do too. Hot and sour soup.
That's my favorite.
Wonton soup. Mm-hmm. And
all the classics.
Yeah, I'm blanking. There's a really healthy one. It's tofu and spinach.
Yum.
In a chicken or vegetable broth. So
great. So are there any other cookbooks that you're thinking about doing at this point? Or are you just a little too invested in, you know, the design? And
yeah, I've been mainly focusing on the design shop right now, but there are some that I've been thinking of just in my head that I haven't really worked out into a full-blown book proposal yet.
Would they be Chinese food? Or would you explore, like, other avenues? Or
they would be probably Asian-focused and seasonal-focused.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily just traditional Chinese food.
I feel like you should have a book that's just devoted to dumplings.
I think so, too.
I don't know if any of you follow Diana on Instagram, but her photos of dumplings, they're just gorgeous. Like, when I think of dumplings, I think of, like, the most delicious food in one bite.
Yeah,
but I never
exactly.
thought of them as being beautiful. And there's just something about, like, the light that you capture and, like, the simplicity of, like, you know, just flour, water. Obviously, you don't see what's inside the dumpling. I mean, it's just, they're so clean.
Oh, thank you.
And they just look so delicious. And I'm really disappointed you didn't bring a lot of dumplings today.
I should have brought a big bag of frozen dumplings.
Yeah. And so, like, as far as your dumplings go, you do a lot of dumpling classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where do you do those classes?
I do all pretty much a lot of places around the city. The main place where I teach dumpling classes now is the Brooklyn Brainery in Prospect Heights.
Right, that moved.
Oh, yeah. They used to be in Carroll Gardens, but they moved to a bigger location in Prospect Heights. And it's got, like, you know, like a nice intimate feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to teach at West Elm Market, too, dumpling classes. And then general cooking classes I teach at the Brooklyn Kitchen and ICE, Institute of Culinary Education.
You're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just dumpling classes, you
No,
said?
No. A lot of... I do, like, general Chinese classes, like, I do a Chinese vegetarian one, I do a dim sum one, Sichuan cooking, God, I'm blanking on so many.
Well, have you ever thought about, like, having a food truck or, you know, having a restaurant or...
I kind of have thought about it here and there, but it's just so time consuming to operate a restaurant. And I feel like I get more, enjoyment out of just teaching people how to do this.
Okay.
Rather than just, you know, being in the back of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And it's a good way of interacting with people through food, too.
Yeah. I wish there was a way to, like, show up somewhere and always have your dumplings available. So the other classes that you tell me about the classes that you teach with Chitra. I said that wrong. I always say it wrong.
Chitra.
Hi, Chitra. who also was on Eat Retreat with us in October. And her food gears geared more towards Indian, South Asian cooking. And then you guys do a lot of collaboration.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
So we decided kind of randomly on a whim last year, because I specialize in Chinese cooking and she specializes in vegetarian Indian, to maybe just do a pop-up dinner and collaborate on the two. So the name of the supper club is called Tongra, which is the neighborhood in Calcutta where Chinese immigrants first, I guess, landed when they ended up in India, and where Chinese Indian fusion just grew out of. But Chinese Indian food, Chinese Indian fusion food, like traditional Chinese Indian fusion food, is just very much like Chinese, American Chinese food, like a lot of fried things, oily things, but just a little bit spicier. So we wanted to do a healthier take on it, and just our own take on Chinese Indian fusion. So we use, it's all vegetarian. It's, we use seasonal, local vegetables. So every single season we, source things from farmers markets or local farmers. And we just, do a pop-up dinner with 7 courses and, beer and cider pairings.
That sounds incredible. So what was the last one you guys did?
Our last one we did was last week. Last Thursday at an art gallery called the Court Street Collective in Carroll Gardens. And it was an art gallery that's owned by Chitra's friend, Stephen. And we've done another dinner there in the past, in the fall. And found the space to be really intimate. So we decided to do our spring dinner there too. And it was 24, 25 people. So it's really cozy.
How did these people, were they invited? Did they find it online?
We just advertised it through our blogs and social media channels, Facebook. And I think a lot of people find us just through Eventbrite too, because there aren't that many vegetarian supper clubs out there.
Right.
So I think people are looking for something very unique.
Yeah. Too. Well, you and Chitra, I mean, originally I was hoping Chitra would be here today to talk to you, because you guys do so much collaboration, and you're both very much entrepreneurs and, like, you know, young professional women who I just really admire. And Chitra has this product that she's been making and she's been selling really well, called Achar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she has different flavors. I know she has tomato, she has garlic.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
I think that's it so far. She started last year with tomato. The company is called Brooklyn Deli, like
D-E-L-H-L-I. Yeah, I love that name.
And she just came out with a garlic one fairly recently.
I think
she's
tried that yet.
Working on one for the summer with rhubarb.
That
or
sounds,
gooseberry meat.
Yeah, they're so good. I mean, they're kind of like a chutney or a spread. I mean, it's just this condiment that you can kind of put on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any cross-pollination? Like, have you put her achar on your Chinese food or anything like
yeah,
that?
I've done a few recipes and just posted it on Instagram with them, like with noodles or omelets.
Yes, I put the tomato on eggs and it was good.
And then we serve it at the dinner, too, at the pop-up dinner.
I can see how it could... It's part of a really good sauce, too, for the dumplings.
It's a good dumpling dipping sauce, so that's how we serve
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see how it would be good in really anything. That sounds good. You're making me hungry. So when you make dumplings, are there certain kinds that are, like, your signature? Do you ever try anything a little more experimental?
What I teach in class is very traditional, so it's usually, like, a pork and mushroom and scallion mix, but sometimes I do turkey, which is very non-traditional. There are so many different dumpling flavors that I've tried. My most elaborate one that I've ever done was for a supper club that my friend had a few years ago, and it was a Chinese New Year dinner, and I wanted to be very ambitious, and I decided to do braised duck leg dumplings.
Wow.
So I just braised duck legs for like 3 hours, shredded them and put them into dumplings, but I don't think I'll ever do it again because it's so labor intensive.
What's the weirdest dumpling combination that maybe you haven't done, but you might want to do?
The weirdest? Oh, gosh.
Or that you've heard of? Because you can do anything you want. That's the thing about dumplings.
Definitely.
There's no rules. Not to put you totally on the spot.
That I have done or that I want to do?
Probably, both.
I don't know. Well, I don't know if this is like weird, but it is unusual and it worked. So for Tongra, our signature dumpling is Chitra Southeast Indian stir fry made out of sweet potato and coconut and mustard seeds and curry leaves. And then we blended it and we cooked it down into a paste, and then we put it into a dumpling. And I thought it would be good, but I didn't know like how good it would be.
It was really that good.
Yeah. And with a little bit of like shredded coconut. So
that is very unusual for a dumpling, I would say.
That ended up being our signature.
That's fantastic.
And so repeated over the many supper clubs dinners. And gosh, what I want to do is a little bit hard, because I feel like I've kind of tried a lot of things.
Yeah.
Maybe something with like smoked meats or like smoked salmon in a dumpling.
Weird.
Like smoked salmon cream cheese. I would wonder how that would work out.
I would too. I mean, I love smoked salmon, but I've definitely never had it in a dumpling. It's probably hard to make smoked salmon not taste delicious, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay, well, you are getting me super hungry. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Diana Kwan. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is The Morning After. I'm Sarah Kamen, your co-host, and I'm in the studio with our guest today, Diane Kwan. Diane was just telling us about her signature dumplings, which sound so delicious, and her cooking classes and her design shop and her cookbook and all of the many different facets that she's involved in. So what I want to know now is, how can I take our cooking classes? Where can I eat your dumplings?
So I do regular cooking classes at the Brooklyn Brainery and the Brooklyn Kitchen at ICE. So I list all the upcoming classes on my blog, Appetite for China, just on the right-hand side with like a whole list of upcoming events. And you can also follow like the mailing list for the Brainery and the Brooklyn Kitchen too.
What else is on your blog?
Despite the name, Appetite for China is just a name that kind of stuck, but I also have recipes just from all over Asia, and I guess I veer towards being very experimental with my cooking. So it's not just very traditional Chinese recipes, but like, oh, what can I do with, you know, ramps in Chinese food or fiddlehead ferns in Chinese food?
Ah, so there is a Chinese food theme.
Yes.
But not necessarily conventional ingredients.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
Are there any recipes from your cookbook that are also on your blog, or we have to go get your cookbook?
There are, like, I think 8 overlapping recipes.
Okay.
So the cold sesame noodles I mentioned are on it, the General Tso's chicken, Kung Pao chicken. I think I have a version of the egg drop soup with tomatoes. Some vegetarian dumplings, too.
And the cookbook is primarily the Americanized version of Chinese food, you said?
That was how it started.
Okay.
And then, but there are certain recipes like Kung Pao chicken, for example, that I do a very traditional form of Kung Pao chicken. So it was one of the recipes that I found, like, how I came up with the recipes was I scanned through, like, decades and decades of Chinese menus, starting from maybe the 1920s, just to see what were the most popular recipes per decade, and just gathered them into a huge spreadsheet.
Oh, that's so interesting. And, what recipes did you find that used to be popular but are no longer popular?
Egg foo young.
What is that exactly?
It is basically an omelet that that you can put a bunch of things into, like sprouts or mushrooms, sometimes ham. But the defining, the omelet is kind of shallow fried until the edges are pretty crispy, and then it is served with a gravy.
Oh.
So that was one of the recipes that was one of the dishes that used to be incredibly popular.
I remember.
But now
it's
like, it's only at Chinese restaurants, like somewhere in the Midwest or in the South.
I grew up in the Midwest, so it's not surprising that it sounded really familiar to me.
Yeah.
So what recipes are more popular now that you didn't see that back then? And then this is sort of like a two-part question. But what kind of trends do you see happening in Chinese food, I guess, you know, specifically like in New York?
Mm-hmm. So for trends, I think we are definitely seeing more regional Chinese foods, like food of like Xi'an or Fujianese food, Shanghainese food, food that you didn't see, you know, a couple of decades ago. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more growing interest in regional Chinese foods. And also just another, I guess, trend would be any use of Sichuan peppers. I know, like, it's Sichuan food. Sichuan pepper, if you don't know it, it's a reddish pepper that comes from Sichuan province, or comes from actually Western China near Tibet. And it's used in a lot of Sichuan food. But for a period of like a few years in the 2000s, it was banned in the US because they feared that they carried like a citrus tree disease or something. Hmm. So it's no longer banned. So a lot of chefs are becoming very experimental with using it. And I know in Mission Chinese, I don't think it's around anymore. I think it closed up or something.
I think it's closed at this moment. Yeah.
Yeah. But they used a lot of Sichuan pepper in their dishes.
And it's incredibly spicy.
And it's incredibly, the flavor, it's called numbing spiciness. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of feels like a shot of Novocaine almost. But we're seeing a lot more creative uses for Sichuan pepper. And that is something that I do a lot of on my blog too. Mm-hmm.
Do you do any cocktails? Because it makes me think of, you know, like this whole resurgence or, I don't know, just surgence of like really spicy or pepper.
I actually haven't
cocktails.
Done with cocktails yet, but that's a good idea.
I mean, a fun pairing.
I've sprinkled it onto ice cream and sorbets.
Oh, that sounds
very
great.
Good.
Yeah. So when is the next pop-up dinner? How do we find out about your pop-up dinner?
So the next one, it would be Tangra Summer, and that would probably be in July. And we're trying to look for a bigger venue right now to hold more people. So you can follow us at Tangra Feast on Facebook. So we don't have a website, but a Facebook page as of now. And yeah, we put up like all... we start announcing the dinner about like a month or so before. So that's how you can keep an eye out on
okay.
it.
Okay, and then what about Plate and Pencil?
And Plate and Pencil is just at plateandpencil.com, and you can see all sorts of different food-inspired things for tote bags and prints and
they
baby onesies.
Great gifts. If you know anyone with a baby, and I'm sure you do, the most adorable little onesies, little dumpling. And I love the wine tote.
Oh, thank you.
What is it? Don't wine.
Love the wine you're with.
Love the wine you're with. Yeah, hilarious. All of these things are fantastic gifts.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just amazing that they all come from one mind. So your website, Appetite for China, can mm-hmm. lead us to all of these different things.
Yeah, definitely.
As well. So that would be like the most direct place to go.
Yeah, there's links to all these different side projects, I guess, and side businesses.
Okay. Any big plans for the future? You're just kind of maintaining it all right now.
Yeah, I'm just trying to grow Plate and Pencil to have more items, more designs, and hopefully continuing with the cooking classes and maybe another cookbook in the future.
I hope so. I can't wait. Well, thank you so much, Diana. It was a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Jesse, my co-host, who's not here. I hope everything's great and look forward to seeing you again next week. And we'll be here same time, same place. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.